the hats that rarely gets mentioned that I wear proudly is that, and I'm not trying to one-up you, but I'm also a lay minister in the Anglican Church of Canada. I'm fairly used to doing sermons, and I always use George Burns' line, which is a good sermon should have a great beginning and a great ending and be as close together as possible. When I was asked to speak today about what the curriculum might look like with regard to nurturing the educated citizen, I turned to my colleagues. I teach in Acadia 7 Elementary School, and I had long conversations with them, as long as you can have between last Monday and today. And I also phoned and chatted with some colleagues at the high school, and of course, luckily, I happen to be married to a university professor, so I had her sort of do some work with her colleagues. And then finally, I belong to a linguistics listserv out of the University of Pennsylvania, so I posed the question to some linguistics PhD students. And it was interesting to see what they came back with, because the responses were remarkably similar, from teachers of five-year-olds through to 25-year-old students. And it tended to start with, well, they have to know how to read and write and do math. And then it changed quickly to an agreement that curriculum has to give students the tools that they need to access information and to continue to learn beyond their schooling years. The teachers I spoke to understand that the amount of knowledge that students are learning is growing exponentially. I mean, the common complaint is what they're learning in grade 10, I learned in second year university. And when I was doing grade 12 math, my dad, who was a metallurgical engineer, was shaking his head because my grade 11 and 12 math was his second and third year university math. So that blossoming of knowledge has been huge in the last 50 years. And yet, we continue to expect kids to do that. I look at our math textbooks with 12 units to teach in 10 months. And I call it the mile-wide curriculum, an inch deep and a mile wide. And we never do any of it very well because we've got to get on to the next thing. And I think that we have to look at that status quo and say it's time to make the curriculum a mile deep and an inch wide, and maybe look at three units or something like that. It's not going to serve the purpose of dealing with a standardized test, but it's certainly going to help kids. I always hear that there's too much to cover and not enough time in the day to do it. And teachers are concerned about the amount of content that students are exposed to, mostly because of what's been lost in the drive to fill the students with that content crunch. And what's missing is the time in the conversation that kids need to process the information in a social setting. And that's lost, especially when you get to those examinable content courses, where you've got to know what the three E's of the Canadian Senate are in grade 11, because that's going to be question number three on the grade 11 exam. And you have to know what a governor general is, because that's also going to be there. How to get that information is pretty simple, and that's what we should be teaching kids, I think. What they need to do, and what we need to do, is look at ways of turning kids from knowledge and understanding to wisdom. Because when you build a foundation of knowledge and understanding, wisdom hopefully is what follows. You have to look at information, determine what's credible, think critically about the source of information, and learn to manipulate that information. I believe that the educated citizen needs the skills not only to access knowledge, but to pass on the knowledge. Verbal and written skills are significantly important so that we continue to build our understanding. The ability to pass on knowledge comes with a social awareness. And we have to provide our students with the tools needed to access the social capital that allows them to be seen as equals. That may mean changing our current pedagogy to include an acknowledgement of what's known it's actually a teaching theory coming out of Australia called the literacy of power. And that directly teaches students forms of communication so that that levels their playing field. Cope and Kalantzis are the researchers, but it gives them the skills to write a letter to to their principal asking for permission for a field trip in grade 3 that is a business letter. And then to be able to turn around and write a letter to their grandmother at the same time. Those are going to look significantly different. But our kids don't have that. And it's particularly important for our gray area students, those kids whose socioeconomic or cultural backgrounds is not middle class European, which, for all we work at it, that's where our schools still are. And those kids need the tools to speak and read and write so that they'll be heard by those who have the money. And the people who have the money have the power. And if we don't do that, then the gap's going to continue to widen between those kids and that small portion of society that's controlling the wealth. In these days of standardized testing and district-wide whatevers, and we all know those, the fundamental element we're missing is the creation of a citizen who has articulated a set of values that help them take part in a meaningful way in their community. And when I say community, it's the school community and the wider community. Fraser Institute and Maclean's magazine might rank the academic prowess of schools and universities, but they forget that schools are communities, and the values of their community, combined with the school's ability to maintain and enhance those values, should be the governing factor in the creation of a great school, and in turn, the creation of an educated citizen. The current ministry's cry, and it's been the cry for 5 years, is it's all about achievement. I've been at conferences where the minister gets up and says that, and it's not about achievement, it's about learning. Our response should be that. No, it's about learning. The foundation that underpins what children learn should be a reflection of the values of the community in which they live. And that allows for the diversity of community. What our students learn shouldn't be governed by what data is collected through a standardized assessment like the FSA, which is a reflection of socioeconomic success. And it should be a neighborhood school, more than a reflection of the learning that takes place. I always go back to the first time that the FSA scores were going to be released by a school on a school-by-school basis. And I got my nose right out of joint about it. You probably read some article in the BC Teacher recently that had me speaking. And I went to see my superintendent because I thought, this is heinous, it's wrong. The school district I teach in is the size of New Brunswick. We have a school in a community that doesn't have hydroelectric power. It's the choice of the community not to be on the grid because the traditional values of the people of Numaya Valley don't lend themselves to Western civilization. And yet, they're being scored on the same template that a school in West Vancouver is, where if the power went out, the city would shut down.
They don't let the power go out.
No, they don't. But when I went to see my superintendent, he said, I've got the test scores right here. And he stuck them in his desk drawer. He said, let's rank the schools by how you think they're going to do. So we took the 37 elementary schools, and we started talking about them, and we missed on one. We flipped them. Number 11 and number 12 were wrong. But I knew which school, number one, was going to be the school that came first, because it was the school closest to the golf course in Williams Lake. Right? And I knew which school was going to be last, because it was the school farthest away from what we would consider civilization to be. So he said, these test scores don't tell us anything. Great superintendent to work for. He got fired. That's right. Anyway, another element that's lost in schools is when we're required to pump in these pieces of discrete knowledge. So we take away the chance for the students to explore their community and their culture. And it's in exploration that they gain an understanding of these complex relationships that create our society. All of my colleagues, bar none, agreed that school is a place where students learn to be members of the complex society in which we live. And they know that this society is changing. And there's only one place where Canadians share a common experience now. That's the neighborhood public school. We can't count on everyone to be in the same church as us, or to be in Guides or Cubs, or go to whatever temple is part of the community. The one place that they all get together is still the school. And that's, I mean, in my childhood, the kids that I went to school with were all in my neighborhood school, and we joined clubs that were taught by our parents in our neighborhood. And we can't count on that anymore. So creating citizens is happening in the schools more than anywhere else. And it's the one place where kids are going to meet diversity. And it's the one place that we're going to learn to interact with each other. And hopefully, the diversity that they do meet is going to be embraced. And that's the other mark of an educated citizen. It's somebody who understands the complex relationships among peoples and cultures. Students have to learn that they can agree or disagree with dogmas based on the values that they bring to school. But at the same time, they have to be given the skills to critically examine those dogmas and determine for themselves whether or not they agree with them, whether or not there's value in holding on to them, even. And it goes back again to that teaching of critical thinking. We have to be able to gather information, work with the information, determine whether or not critical information is missing, and then make decisions. One of the most interesting responses I got to my question regarding the educated citizen was from a fellow named Jean-Francois, who's a linguistic student at the University of Pennsylvania. He's pretty immature, as far as I'm concerned, on the listserv. He's a child prodigy. There's no question about that. 24 years old, he's finishing his PhD, he's already got postdoc work lined up, yada, yada, yada. Not socially very aware. But I asked him, what do you need to learn in school? And he said, geography, psychology, and sociology. Especially in the high school. The social sciences, because if you don't understand the world, and you don't understand yourself, and you don't understand how those things fit together, you're not going to get anywhere. So my estimation of his maturity increased significantly. At no time in all of the conversations that I have did anybody say we have to deal with examinable content. It was quite interesting. Another fundamental aspect of educating citizenry is the act of being a citizen and what that means. Over the 23 years of my teaching career, I've become more aware of the need for my students to leave the classroom with a greater awareness of their part in the human family and their responsibility to that human family. I have posted on the wall of my classroom, right by the door, the Declaration of Human Rights of the United Nations. It's not in kid language. It's the Declaration. And we talk about those rights every day in the context of the current events of the day. The news. We listen to CBC Radio. That's how we start the morning with the 9 o'clock news. And we talk about what's going on in the world and what's happening there. And my 9-year-olds, they're little kids. But they know when a fundamental right has been abrogated. And they can articulate it. And over the year, I hear them start to use the language of that Universal Declaration of Human Rights. They turn it into kid language, but that's there. And I use that, hear them use the words of that declaration to support their views when they are dealing with an injustice that they see. At the same time, I have posted in my classroom 2 lists. I don't know if you ever subscribe to the New International Magazine, but you can buy these posters called How to Build Global Community and How to Build Community. And they're just lists of things that people should be doing and thinking about when they're living in the world. Simple as it sounds, one of my goals is to have my students start to live on their front porch instead of on their sun deck in the backyard. Sounds like an interesting concept, but when you look at communities, look at the neighborhood in Toronto where my dad grew up, everybody had a front porch, and from May the 1st until October the 1st, you lived on the front porch. You knew your neighbors because you saw them walk by. You talked to them. My dad said he knew what stereo was from the time he was 4 years old, because everybody had their baseball game on the radio, and you just had to go from porch to porch to hear it. But now, what's the front yard of almost everybody's house in the new subdivisions? It's a garage door. There's no welcome there at all. and they're living behind a fence in their backyard. And I want my kids to see that the front porch is where we need to live, because we need to see each other walk by. Anyway, I kind of went off topic there. Assuming that a school is a community, we can help raise our students' awareness of their place in this small school world. And if they can have their awareness raised there, then like that famous stone being dropped in a pond, the ripples may go beyond the classroom. And you only need to have seen Al Gore's movie or read Ronald Wright's A Short History of Progress to know that we are on a train that is going faster and faster and faster towards a cliff. Now, whether the cliff is in front of us and we're going to hit it, or whether we're going to go off of it, that is yet to be determined. But unless we learn to put the brakes on, we are in big trouble. When I started to look at this, I Googled educated citizen, big surprise. And I was reading a speech given by John F. Kennedy in 1963 to the graduating class of Vanderbilt University. And one of his comments that I took to heart was that the educated citizen knows how much more there is to know. And I think that's the job that we're charged with doing, is not to create educated citizens, but to create educating citizens. And what I strive for is for students to leave my classroom thinking differently than when they walked in. I want them to see themselves as this part of the global community, making choices and changes for themselves that will impact others in a positive way. And I want them to have their attitudes reflect not only who they are, but also the society that they're going to come to create in the future. As citizens, our students need to possess the knowledge and understanding to make informed decisions about how they're governed and what they expect from the people they choose to govern them. They need to learn the value and the power of their voice and their vote, and to learn to exercise that. When you come from the Caribou Chilcotin, that became really true when Charlie Wise was elected initially by one vote. And we joked about it, but it was true. They gave a ride to somebody who was painting their porch. And because of that, there's an NDP MLA. It changed with the recount and so on. But all of a sudden, it became my vote that made a difference. The election night, I was down here for a meeting. And my wife was driving me to the airport, and she said, "I'm just not sure who I'm going to vote for." And I said, "Please." This time, please.
Be sure.
Be sure. Got a Green Party person, and I know you feel really strongly that way, but please, could you for me not vote Green? It's an interesting phone call at 11 o'clock that night. Anyway, that's a story that kids need to hear, that they can make a difference with one vote. Now, the main emphasis of my time was to be the curriculum needed by an educated person. And I haven't forgotten the sciences or the arts for technology education or the acquisition of language. Should point out my wife's also the past president of Canadian Parents for French for BC and BC and Yukon, so I have to put that plug in for a second language learning, although I grew up in Quebec, so I also support that. Nor have I forgotten the need to deal with the physical and mental health of our kids. And one section that I believe in strongly that's missing is dealing with the spiritual health of our children, because kids are the most spiritual beings in the world, and we find me anywhere where we address that. But that's just a little bandwagon that I won't get to. The question is, of course, how do we fit all of that in? Well, we do partially what we have been doing. We provide students with a broad, liberal education, small L liberal, in their formative years, and then allow them to make the choices for themselves as they mature. Within the choices, though, we have to leave room for the students to be exposed to that broad spectrum within schools, with elective choices that are accessible for everybody, and then help them see the value in tasting what's available. I always consider myself lucky because I finished high school not knowing what I was going to do, so I also graduated a year early, and I went to Europe for a year. And when I came back, I discovered that at UVic in those days, if you registered in courses after the first day of school, the computer didn't catch up with you for a couple of months, and you only paid for 15 units. So I took 24, 30, and I did the stuff I wanted to do. I knew I was going to be a teacher, so I did the 15 units each year that were required within having to become an elementary school teacher. But I had a ball. I took art history. I took anatomy. I just sampled and tasted. And I may have got a C+ in some of them, but that's okay. I had the chance to do that. And we're taking those choices away because everything is so set now. Learn more and more about less and less. I realize that a great deal of what I suggested students need to leave with isn't quantifiable with a rubric or with a standardized achievement measure. Now, how do we measure our success? John Rawls, an American philosopher, says that we measure it by how we treat our worst off members. And if our students leave our elementary and high schools knowing and demonstrating that their life's work is service to others and leaving the world better than when they came into it, then we've done our job. Thank you.
I want to thank Wayne and Rob again. They've done a wonderful job of setting the stage for our small group discussion about the kind of teaching and curriculum we need to produce an educated person. Though I must say I want to put a plug in for physics, because if anything tells you what you don't know, it's teaching physics, and my students tell me that all the time. So
I did mention science.